Consider this. 100% of owners will leave their business one day, but few are prepared. Are you? Don't worry, you're in the right place with this podcast, Succession Stories. Host Lori Barkman, the business transition Sherpa, guides you from transition to transaction, from building value in your business to letting go. Lori is a business transition and M&A advisor, specializing in growth, acquisitions, and selling owner-led companies. She's also the author of the Business Transition Handbook. Get your copy and learn how to avoid succession pitfalls and create valuable exit options. Sign up for a business transition newsletter at successionstories.com. Show us the love by subscribing to the show and posting a review. We appreciate you. Now, here's this week's Succession Stories with Lori Barkman.
Welcome back to the Succession Stories podcast. If you're not already, please give me a follow on LinkedIn and Instagram at Lori Barkman. Subscribe to the show, and if you enjoy it, leave us a review. Go to ratethispodcast.com/successionstories. Today, I'm joined by Megan Lynch, the driving force behind Six Point Creative, a marketing services firm dedicated to empowering family-owned and closely held businesses. We explore the challenges that family businesses face in balancing sustainability and growth. We dive into strategies how family businesses can achieve 2x growth while maintaining control over relationships, messaging, and future direction. Megan advises on 3 essential steps for family-held businesses to achieve their goals in the coming year and beyond. Enjoy this Succession Stories episode about how family businesses navigate growth crossroads with Megan Lynch. Megan Lynch, welcome to Succession Stories. We met at the Cornell Family Business Conference not too long ago, and here we are meeting again on Zoom. So welcome.
Thank you so much, Lori. I'm really happy to be here.
It was a great conference, don't you think? I learned a lot. What was some of the most surprising things that you found from that conference?
Oh man, there were so many of them. It was like jam-packed with insights. I feel like a few of my big takeaways, like things that I keep kind of like telling other people whenever I get a chance, is they talked about a study that their PhD program was doing on the effect of education on the success of family businesses. And one of the big takeaways from the findings was a little bit counterintuitive, where they found that for family businesses, especially families who have really high involvement in the businesses themselves, that education could actually be counterproductive. It could actually produce negative outcomes if you didn't also take into account the family system along with the business system and kind of business best practices. And that, to me, I was kind of, even during the conference, I was like slacking my team, being like, this is why we exist. Like, yes, this is what we've been like, you know, something that kind of like I've known, kind of felt from a gut standpoint, but then to see it in data and graphs and have somebody studying it was really exciting to me. So like, that's something that I've been really trying to talk to people about, is that these are two different systems that do both need their own attention and care and expertise. And I think that that was really exciting to me.
Yeah. I love that you and I met there. It was after one of the panels that I had been on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of just clicked in on how family businesses can think about their evolution, especially if they want to continue on in the future. And I was fascinated by what you're doing. I want to start with you and your story and how you got into supporting family businesses through creative storytelling and the other support you do through your agency. And why family biz? So tell me your background there.
Yeah. So my family is not a family business. I'm kind of unique in the space in some ways, just because I don't come from a family business background, where I think a lot of family business advisors do. But somebody the other day, and it may have even been when we were talking after the conference, my father is an Episcopal priest, and I was a priest kid growing up. And as I look back, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, like he was kind of the CEO of the parish. And I kind of learned a lot of leadership skills and got involved there. But he was a priest. My mom was a teacher. Business was not really something that was spoken in our house, like, you know, very foreign concept to what we were doing. But I thought I was going to be a teacher, like a college professor. I have a master's in English literature that I have yet to deploy. But while I was in graduate school, I started working in a marketing agency, doing work there. And I just really started liking my day job more than I was liking academia. Like it was just so almost like more corporate than corporate, like all the things that I thought I was going to love to do, you know, have amazing conversations with people about books and just read all the time. And that was not really what it was like at all. So I kind of switched gears and ended up going deeper into marketing and worked in an agency where I met the two partners that we since founded Six Point. And yeah, that was kind of the short form, but got into family business when they started talking about their retirement, because they were kind of on the tail end of their career. I was on the beginning of mine when we started the company. And so when they started talking about retirement and kind of winding down, and I was going, oh, I'm just getting started, you know, I realized that we kind of had a succession issue. So I reached out to a family business center locally and joined, even though we weren't technically a family business, but a lot of the conversations that they were having were really simple or similar to what we were going through. And the more time I spent with that group, the more I was just like, oh, these are my people. Like, this is the kind of business that I love. And so, yeah, it just kind of went from there.
Well, you teed it up, so I have to ask, because the title of the show, of course, is Succession Stories.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about the succession with your partners. How did you manage that?
How did we manage it? Like, I would say overall, luckily, they were able to let me know probably like 3 to 5 years before they were truly thinking about retiring, that they were thinking about retiring. So I had time to let the initial wave of panic subside, gather myself, and start to look for resources to figure out how we make this successful. I think my biggest concern was that the two of them were really the major like doers and relationship holders in the business. I was much more behind the scenes running the business operations. And so the idea of like, oh my gosh, they're leaving and is all this just going to go away? You know, like what is going to happen? And then also knowing that how the business of the three of us is not going to be exactly the same as the one when it's just me, because you know, they brought skills that I don't have. They brought perspective that I don't have. So kind of what would the business be like when they left was sort of a big open question. So there was a lot of trial and error and mistakes along the way with the transition. But now that we're kind of firmly on the other side, I feel really excited about the future. Like we are definitely not the same company at all. It becomes one of those, like if you change every board in the ship, is it still the same ship? We're still technically Six Point, but it's a really different company than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, for sure.
Well, there are a couple of key points there. One, they gave you 3 to 5 years notice, which is great, you know, yeah. Better than 2 months of, hey, I'm retiring in 2 months and you got to figure this out on your own. Did you end up buying them out?
Yes. I ended up buying them out of the company, and we were able to kind of work with an advisor who was really great about taking time to talk with us each individually about what are our individual needs, as well as what is our collective goal for the business itself. And I think one of the things that came out in that was that both David and Marcia were really committed to having the company survive the transition. And that was kind of once we finished working with him, that was kind of his big takeaway was like, hey, all three of you really want this to be successful and to carry forward, that nobody's in it to get as much as they can out of the business and forget about, you know, what happens after, but that everybody kind of has longevity and succession truly in mind. And I think the fact that that was the case and that we could kind of state that and put that at the center of the work is how do we make sure that this lasts was a really important piece of it, because I think it was something that we could always come back to when we had to make difficult decisions and talk about buyouts and legal agreements and things like that. You know, that kind of centering that in the work was really important.
Gotcha. Yeah, that is a really interesting backdrop to what you're doing with the agency and working with family businesses. You, like you said, you're not coming from one, but you have the sensitivity of some of the transition issues that family businesses face. And likewise, you are helping them with a sustainable future, which was something that was important to you and your partners. So let's switch gears and talk about that. What prompts a visit to your door? You know, what is on the mind of the client that helps you say to them, yeah, I can help you? What are they churning on?
Yeah, so there's usually a few key events. There's actually, you know, we've kind of identified six evolution points that family businesses go through that do kind of bring them to our doorstep. But overall, there's this feeling of a simultaneous feeling of opportunity. Like, we see the future, we see kind of the sense of like there's something exciting that could be, but also just this stuck feeling of just not understanding how to get from where we are to kind of that like inkling of that future that we have. So things like next generation transitions, entering a new market or channel, you know, like seeing opportunity of say like, oh, we could grow this company in that market, but we don't know those customers, we don't have relationships, you know, all the things that made us successful where we are, we don't have that in this new space. So it kind of creates this like scary feeling of just being stuck and being worried that if I make the wrong move, I'm going to actually move us backwards. And I don't know exactly what the right move is. And so that kind of like lack of confidence, especially in a business where they are used to being confident, like they really know their existing customers, they really know their existing business. And so this sense of kind of loss of control or loss of clarity is a new feeling for them.
Do you think it's a feeling of market disruption in some cases, where the giant is moving in and taking over, whether it's geography literally, or in the case of a global product or a product that's nationwide, where there's just a new technology or something disrupting the way they've always done things?
Sometimes there will be a sense of that disruption. Oftentimes it's much more of a positive sense of we see a way that we could be the disruptor, that we could provide value in a different space to a different customer segment in a different way than we've done before. And so it's I think most often that's kind of what's driving it, is a sense of abundance of opportunity, but just no way to tap into it.
This episode is sponsored by the best-selling book, The Business Transition Handbook, How to Avoid Succession Pitfalls and Create Valuable Exit Options. Business owners will learn how to navigate the emotional and practical nature of the transition process to avoid exit regrets. It's crucial to start planning when time is on your side so you don't leave money or your happiness on the table. Reading this book, you'll have Lori Barkman, the Business Transition Sherpa, guiding you along the way. To download a free copy, head to thebusinesstransitionhandbook.com. That's thebusinesstransitionhandbook.com today.
Okay, so there's this growth mindset. There's a sense of we can do more. They need some clarity and structure and execution assistance around how do we do that? So let me ask you, how do you help them do that? How do you prioritize growth opportunities? It's a really strategic challenge.
It is. Yeah. I mean, a lot of what we do, I mean, again, I come from a family of educators. I wanted to be a teacher. So I kind of come at everything from the lens of education. And I think it was one of the reasons why that like Cornell study spoke to me so much, is that we always start our engagements with workshops with their leadership team. So really bringing cross-functional teams and different perspectives and ways of looking at the business together in a room and really truly try to get clear about exactly what this opportunity is and what it can mean for the business. And again, like usually when they come to us, they have a sense of opportunity, or even maybe one or two people, you know, on the team sees the opportunity, but other people aren't quite on board for, you know, what it could mean or don't quite see it the same way. And so, so really working with them to get clear on what that future could look like. And really try to also get clear on what they don't know. You know, what are those things that are stopping them from moving forward? Because having the right data and asking the right questions is like 9/10 of the battle. You know, as soon as they start to get that data, then the path forward becomes a lot, almost self-evident, right? You know, but a lot of times there's just kind of like this, they're used to just kind of making gut level decisions without the data. And so, so kind of changing that mindset and trying to bring in, you know, market data, trying to bring in customer, you know, voice of the customer interviews, things that can start to give more texture and nuance to the decision and start to make it clear what success looks like and also where the potential failure points might be.
So generalizing a little bit here, but do you work mostly with Gen 2, Gen 3, Gen 1? Who do you tend to work with here on these projects?
It's usually a mixture. There's often multiple generations in the room, and oftentimes we become, you know, a helpful mediator or translator between a Gen 1 and a Gen 2 or a Gen 2 and a Gen 3. But I think there is definitely, like, I've seen kind of a trend in next gens, you know, sort of stepping into family businesses and identifying brand strategy and positioning as being something that needs attention in the company in a way that I hadn't really seen in previous generations. And so I think that there's definitely a sense that like the current or kind of incoming generation is a lot more kind of like brand native. Like they understand branding as a concept. They understand it as valuable. Whereas previous generations will sometimes balk at the idea of branding, that it feels disingenuous or marketing feels sleazy, or, you know, that it's kind of more about like, build it and they will come. Like if we just really do a good job and we're true to our word, then that's going to be, you know, that's where our value is created, where the kind of incoming generation has more of a sense of like, well, if we don't tell our story, other people are going to tell it for us. So we need to, if we can't control it, at least we need to influence what that story is.
Do you see a difference in companies that have their name on the door versus not?
It definitely means that the decisions around the brand when the name is on the door tend to become more emotionally fraught. That there, again, there's a sense of less separation between us and our identity and the business itself, and it's even harder to get that space. That said, we also do see from a like a customer relationship, like how invested customers feel in the business and how close they feel to the business, you know, really making family business part of the brand is, whether it's directly through naming or whether it's through storytelling or things like that, that it does definitely have a positive overall effect on how people view the brand and how loyal they feel to it.
Yeah, one example, and I'm sure you have some too, but I'll share one from an earlier, much earlier episode. I think it was in the low digits. I want to say episode 9 on my show. And it was Uncle Charlie's Sausage was the brand. There actually was no Uncle Charlie. So that was a little secret to the brand, but they created an iconic character that was identified with the product. And the person who came on my show was Len Carrick. He had bought the company and they had revamped the brand. And when they wanted to update the logo and the character, it was a really big deal, you know, mm-hmm. as which pictures to choose. And of course, there was no real Uncle Charlie, but they felt like it was a really important thing and got feedback from customers, and they did it the right way, and it was successful. So I share that. Do you have any examples where things that went well in a rebranding with a family name, or things where it went wrong that you might share with us?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think some of the places where we've seen it go well are where we've seen companies take a very almost like surgical approach to change, because I think sometimes in, you know, examples like, you know, the one that you gave there, especially when you buy the company or whatever, you can feel like, oh, there's opportunity in this brand. We need to do a rebrand. And that means like change everything. And we've seen several times where actually making little tiny changes, but making sure that the bulk of the brand identity does not change. So one of our clients is a tool manufacturer, Hyde Tools, and they have these like black and silver tools that are their like guaranteed forever lifetime tools. And they have a black handle with like an oval logo that like people will have, you know, in their grandfather's toolbox, you know, like you see these like old paint scrapers. And when we first came to rebrand their company, one of the things that we did was kind of, you know, look at the different places where equity was in the brand, and that handle, that oval, the colors, the black and silver, was one of the like biggest sources of equity of their brand. So the actual logo of the company had turned into kind of like a blue and red sort of rectangle piece. And so what we ended up doing was taking the logo from the handle of the tool, which was where most customers had their touch point, and make that the logo of the company, as opposed to completely changing everything. It was kind of more like an excavation almost of like, okay, we're not going to change it, but instead we're going to make it more consistent, and we're going to pull out the piece that has the most equity and use that consistently across the company, instead of having these kind of like, they had like multiple brand names and things that had kind of evolved over the years that had sort of diluted the brand. And instead we kind of concentrated it, and it was more about taking things away than like changing or adding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the notion of brand equity in a name is really strong to think about for a family business. When we were attending the conference, and I know you and I had talked about this off air, there was a gentleman who was from the Watson Foundation. Yeah. And if you know, you're listening and you're wondering, oh, Watson, that sounds familiar. What did I know that from? It's from IBM. The Watson family was, I don't know if it was the Watson or there were other partners in the founding as well, but Watson was certainly a significant part of IBM, Mr. Watson. And the Watson family had decided to maintain the name and the rights to the name. So if you think of IBM Watson, that is a licensing agreement that IBM has with the Watson Foundation to use that name for, I think it's an artificial intelligence database and product that they've created, which that just struck me as so astute and aware of the value of the name.
Yeah.
And good for them for thinking of it in terms of a business asset.
Yes. That's another story from that conference that I've been like telling everybody. I was like, oh, this was such a brilliant thing to do, to get ahead of it and protect it and see, again, the value of a name as being important, and that it's not just the name, but it's the trust that people associate with the name and the family and that reputation that they had built over, you know, decades. And so seeing that as an asset and thinking creatively about how to protect it. And also the other thing that I thought was really interesting is that it basically made them separate the Watson family name as an asset away from the IBM company that the family trust was was an asset within the IBM company and that they could kind of take that out, I thought was a really interesting idea now that it's no longer family owned. And so it's just, it's kind of one of those like stories that I sort of filed away as like a potential solution. Because if there's one thing I think that family businesses are really good at, it's about finding like a third way or a fourth way that like, this is how it's done in industries, or this is what, how ways that companies solve problems. And family businesses will say, I don't want any of those. I want a different, you know, some kind of different new solution for this that is aligned with my values or takes into account our community or, you know, takes into account my customers or my employees. And they do not like to let those things go. And I think the fun thing is that it allows for really creative problem solving, like the Watson family coming up with that solution. And it's one of the reasons why we kind of like doing this work, is that it sort of forces you to be more creative, because you often have guardrails or constraints put on how you can solve problems that you might not have if you were in a more publicly traded company, where it's just like, hey, the fastest path to the bottom line is what you're going to do. With family businesses, things are just more complex. It's not just about what's going to make us the most money or how do we increase, you know, returns this quarter, but it's thinking about, you know, how is the community going to react? What are our customers going to think? What about our supplier relationships? All of those pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I ask you for the three big things, what are those three big things that you think any family business should consider in the next 6 to 9 months as they approach the next calendar year? You know, what are those big things that they should be working on to preserve their strategic growth?
I think the first is to truly start thinking about their brand as an asset within the company that needs its own protection and care. And you had a great episode a few weeks ago with Heather Pierce Campbell, who was talking about kind of legally protecting and kind of different ways that you can look at value creation with your company. So I guess first of all would be, people need to listen to that episode, because I think she had a lot of really great creative ways that you can think about where your value is created. And you know, often when I'm talking to family businesses, they'll say like, oh, brand, you know, like that's not really, you know, not needed in our industry, or that's not relevant to us. But if I exchange the word brand with the word reputation, they'll be like, oh, well, our reputation, that's the most important asset we have. And it's like, so if it helps you, substitute the word brand with the word reputation and think about how you're going to protect your reputation, how you're going to amplify your reputation, and really have, you know, be thinking about it as an area where you need to do strategic planning, because a lot of brand work is long tail work. It's not work that can be done, you know, if you think about how reputations are built, it's not done in a day. You can lose them quickly, but it's really hard to build them. So thinking about it as a true strategic objective within the company starts to open up creative solutions. You know, you could start thinking about, you know, the Watsons had to get in front of that. They had to think about, how do we protect the name before it was used on a product? Because once that's out the gate, then you can't kind of get it back in. So doing some strategic planning around the brand, I think, can be really big. The other big piece is that when we meet family businesses, they often have a lot of fear surrounding the next step that they're going to take. So they're about to embark into unknown territory. And there's a lot of fear around, well, if we go into this market, if we do this transition, you know, what are we going to lose? And I would really encourage family businesses, as opposed to hearing that fear and trying to like tamp it down, instead to get very curious about that fear, because that is probably data that you need to be paying attention to. If you're worried that entering this market or this generational transition is going to, for example, put your biggest customer relationship at risk, you need to get curious about that. Like, why are you scared about that? What do you need to know? That's because it's probably not a problem that can't be solved, but it's going to come true if you just say, don't worry about that. That's crazy. We don't need to pay attention to that. So, so I think that that's the other big thing, is to kind of really get curious about fear, and which sounds a little crazy as I say it out loud, but I do think that it really is a place to pay attention and to get curious. And then the other is, I guess if I was going to pick a number three, it would probably be to, when you're thinking about opportunity for your company, and again, this kind of goes back to where we started, but really truly getting clear about exactly what that opportunity is, like be able to quantify it, be able to really understand it in a lot of detail, and really truly think about it in the terms of really getting to know your customers, because that's often, your customers have the information and the data that you need to make a courageous decision, to make a decision that's going to change your business. And oftentimes when we look at inflection points in family businesses, the moment where they grow, the moment where they have innovation, is because they were really truly listening deeply to their customers, and they were hearing something that other people weren't paying attention to. And so, so I guess really taking time to have some deep conversations with your customers and to pay attention to what their lives are like now, not what they were like, you know, 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, I like that a lot. We've talked about the theme on this show so many times, that when the next generation gets the baton, what do they do with it? It's a decision point. And so many people say, well, the spouting whale gets harpooned, so I don't want to get harpooned, therefore I'm not going to mess up, therefore I'm not going to take risks and take chances. I'm going to just stay the course. And what happens? The company flatlines and eventually declines. It's exciting when I think the next gen gets the baton and says, I'm going to do something different, but let me be thoughtful about it. And I love, Megan, that your agency is helping the multi-generational company do that together and try to find a way to communicate through storytelling and other strategic initiatives, how to find that inflection point for growth, how to take things to the next level. And you don't have to be a spouting whale that gets harpooned. You can be the whale that's successful and moves the company forward. I ask everybody that comes on the show if they have a favorite quote or something that inspires them. Do you have one that you want to share?
Yeah, I always have a bunch of quotes, but I feel like the one that I've been kind of going back to most often, both with my team and with our clients, is slow is smooth, smooth is fast. That really taking the time to trust the process, to slow down, to get the information that you need to make good decisions will actually speed things up, and getting impatient and jumping at things is probably not going to be the best path. So that's kind of been a mantra over the past year or so for us.
I like it. I like it. If people want to get in touch with you, Megan, what's a good way to do that?
Sure. I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so definitely feel free to connect with me there. Love to have conversations. I try to post a lot of content that's hopefully helpful to family businesses. Also, feel free to reach out to me through email. It's just Megan, M-E-G-H-A-N, I'm Megan with an H, at sixpointcreative.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, sharing your experience, sharing your knowledge on Succession Stories. It's great to be with you.
So great to be here. Thanks so much, Lori.
And for our listeners, be sure to follow Succession Stories in your favorite podcast player and on YouTube, and be sure to leave us a review. 5 stars helps the show get discovered. To learn more about maximizing the value of your business and planning for transition, sign up for our newsletter and book a complimentary call with me at thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com. Join us next time on Succession Stories for more insights from transition to transaction.
I hope that today's episode resonated with you. What actions will you take as a result? If you want to grow, sell, or transition your business, our strategic transition planning process provides clarity and objectivity on the big questions that may be weighing on your mind. Make an intention and take the next step.
set up a complimentary consultation with me to discuss your goals at thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com. That's thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com.